originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Pena and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To, Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, along with my usual entry mate here on the program, the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Pope Jude, Jude Feld, and we are with you in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, and happy to have everyone tuning in throughout North America on Sirius 219 XM Channel 201, and all of you joining us worldwide with our live streaming and our podcasts on your computer, your mobile devices. You're listening to those on our website at horseracingradio.net. JT, a post-derby edition of Trainer Talk here tonight, and we figured, you know what, we're going to shift gears a little bit. We're not going to go down that derby road and talk with one of the trainers involved in what was a controversial ending to this year's Kentucky Derby, at least in some people's minds. We're going to take it a little different direction, and we're going to focus on the older horse division here today with this particular trainer, but he's had a lot of luck lately, and he's very, very good.
Yeah, I don't know how much of it's luck. I think the guy's pretty talented.
Yeah, good point.
The whole program in West Virginia where he trains is really skyrocketing. So it's a great story.
Yeah, I think you're going to enjoy this visit here tonight. Tonight's guest has saddled 728 winners to date. Those runners have earned more than $14 million in purses. And on April 20th, he saddled his first graded stakes winner, and in doing so, made significant racing history. He is trainer Tim Grahams, and he is with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Everything is good, my friend. Let's start here. Let's not bury the lead. Let's start with the way things sounded when your West Virginia-bred Runnin' to Love You turned for home in the Grade 2 Charlestown Classic.
Runnin' to Love You and Diamond King slugging it out. Rally Cry is all in from third. Then Unbridled One, Something Awesome, and War Story running on from behind. Runnin' to Love You is in front. Diamond King going to make him earn it in the final furlong. Runnin' to Love You trying to run into the history books. Diamond King along his inside. These two to decide it in the classic. It's the Gray Rocket, Runnin' to Love You. And he makes history. The West Virginia bred has won the Charlestown Classic over Diamond King, War Story, and Rally Cry. The hometown faithful erupt, Runnin' to Love You in 150-2.
Well, that was another West Virginia bred, a pumped up Paul Espinosa with the call of the Charlestown Classic at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races just 17 days ago. Tim, as you listen back to that call again, what were some of the things going through your mind?
I tell you, it's funny how just with listening to that call, got goosebumps all over again, just like with Paul's enthusiasm in the race call. I was sitting at the half mile pole on my pony listening, but I could hear Paul, you know, across the infield, his enthusiasm, and I could see my horse up there close, but it was just unbelievable, the feeling and the way the crowd was that day and all their emotions with ours. It was just a fabulous day.
That was kind of a unique situation with you sitting there on your pony on the backside watching the race. I mean, most trainers in the Charlestown Classic were in the dining room and wearing their coat and tie, and you were out there taking care of your horse, which is something that you ordinarily do with this horse because he's a bit of a handful.
Yep. I tell you, when they come past the half-mile pole the first time there where we were setting him and the horse inside of him, of John Services, you could see they were both kind of hooked up together, and they were both running very comfortable. I was thinking to myself, I said, this is going to be a horse race here. because you could see both horses was just really in stride with one another. They look really good when they come by us.
Yeah, Diamond King, he was one of the favorites in the race. Javier Castellano was aboard. You were able to outfinish him. That's saying something, Tim.
I tell you, just words can't explain it, guys. It just was just one of those days where all the stars aligned, and we got lucky with a pretty nice horse.
You know, Jude mentioned the unique aspect of you sitting on your pony at the half-mile pole on the far side of the racetrack, and we actually referenced that on our coverage because from where we were broadcasting from up in the press box right above the finish line, and as Runnin' to Love You had crossed the finish line, I looked over, and I could see you on the pony pumping your arm up in the air. You were so excited, even though you were so far away.
It was unbelievable. I just it's one of those days where you can't really believe it's happening. You know, you had enough confidence in your horse, my wife and I did, but still, when it's starting to come and starting to shape up, you just can't believe it's happening.
Well, you and your wife, you do a lot of work, and you know, you break the horses and train them, and it seems like you're at the track 24 hours a day. So it's got to be tremendously rewarding just to see all your dreams come true there in a couple of minutes.
I'm telling you, what was really nice, the closer I got back to the winner's circle, I could see my wife standing in the winner's circle, and I could see her face and how happy she was. It's just one of those moments where, you know, just it's hard to explain because I could see how happy she was, you know.
Tim, when you were kind enough to spend a little time talking with me for our broadcast earlier in the week, you had mentioned that you really wanted to represent West Virginia and Charlestown well. No matter what happened in the race, you just wanted to have a good showing for the local team. You obviously did that. It was more than a good showing. Why was that so important to you?
Well, you know, my wife and I have been training horses together for like 18 years here, maybe 19. And, you know, we watch every day how hard everybody works here around the racetrack. And, you know, there's a lot of good people here, but you know, with everybody's the effort that they put out every day and everything, we just really wanted to you know, to make Charlestown look good, which it does already. You know, they've been good to us, the breeders program's been good to us, and you know, Charlestown races and the West Virginia breeders program has changed our life.
Yes.
So, you know we just wanted to, you know, step up and make them proud of us, you know.
What is it about Charlestown that people stay there, or they don't want to leave? I mean, there's so many trainers that are based there year round. Usually at a racetrack like Charlestown, people are wanting to go to the bigger tracks, to Belmont and to Santa Anita and wherever, but it seems like you guys are very loyal to Charlestown, and you see a lot of guys and gals stabled there for years at a time. Their horses win almost all of their races at Charlestown. What is it about that place that has that attraction?
Well, you know, the area that we live in right here, in between Harper's Ferry and some other places, it's a beautiful area. A lot of the trainers here have farms, and we raise West Virginia bred horses. So with the West Virginia program being as good as it is, you know, it's good for us to run our horses here. Then we get the breeders' rewards. But, you know, we're satisfied with being here. I mean, it's nice to go other places from time to time when you got a real nice horse. We're not against doing that, but we do really enjoy it here, and we like racing here because a lot of good people.
Well, and you mentioned the dedication and the time that everybody around the racetrack puts in, and that's like that at every racetrack across America. It's really what makes the sport go. You have to have people like that, and people, the sport becomes a passion for them, Tim.
Absolutely.
You know, one thing that strikes me is that when you look at Runnin' to Love You, not only did he record his ninth consecutive victory in winning the Charlestown Classic, but he's trained by you. He's also owned by you. And your wife, and I think that makes it even more special. So when you win a race like this, $1.2 million purse, you're keeping the majority of that. What does that do for you as a small operation? How does that affect you and change your operation now?
Well, you know, what it does after you take a step back and kind of look it over, it helps you get rid of a couple notes, maybe helps you with the farm mortgage and shorten that up for about 10 years or so. But, you know, it takes pressure off of you because now in a lot of aspects you can breathe and you know that your farm payments are made and you know that it just gives you a lot of breathing room that you may not have otherwise.
And that's so important, you know, for a trainer because, you know, it's a cyclical business and you're kind of at the mercy of what kind of horses you have. And when you're breeding them and buying them, sometimes you have an off year, and that really can put a strain on the whole operation.
Absolutely. It does at times. Like you say, it's sometimes the old saying is chicken today, feathers tomorrow. but like you say, you hope that with having, you know, weanlings, yearlings, two-year-olds and three-year-olds, you hope to have enough to where even when some of them are down or some of them need time, you got others coming in to take their place, you know, and help with making revenue. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's very important, and it's almost like a baseball team. Your farm team is just as important as your main team because that's where your players come from.
Absolutely, absolutely.
If
you run out at the farm, you know that you're going to run out at the racetrack eventually.
Yeah,
that's true. Talking with trainer Tim Grahams here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. As you heard just a short time ago, Tim trained the first West Virginia bred ever to win the biggest race in the state of West Virginia, the Grade 2 $1.2 million Charlestown Classic. That was just 17 days ago. He is just now starting to come down to earth, as he told me yesterday when I called him to come on the show. I said, Tim, are you still on cloud nine? And he said, I think we're just now starting to touch the ground. So he's had a lot of fun with this particular victory. Tim, tell us the story of Running to Love You, a horse that's been so brilliant and now even more brilliant in winning a Grade 2. But tell us the backstory behind this horse.
Well, you want me to start from farm days?
Sure. Yeah, we'd love to hear the story.
That's funny, actually. We started breaking the yearlings and stuff, and my wife always liked this gray colt, and so did I. I would come home in the evening. She said, how are you and the gray doing? I said, well, we're not doing too good. But anyway, it went on and on and on for like till about 3 months, because every day was like the first day trying to get this colt started. He was just really tough. So finally, one day, I could see where I was making a little bit of headway with him. And then when I come home, and she said, well, how are you and the gray doing? I said, well, I can actually say, today I made some progress with him. And then after we got that one crossing point with him, he started, you know, he started to mature. He started, you know, to think a little better. But he was still always a little bit tough. But, you know, got him on, got him to the racetrack, and he showed us that he was pretty precocious early on, and ended up having a good two-year-old season. But always was just a little bit tough in the paddock, a little tough to get the saddle on, and just, things wasn't real smooth with this colt. But, you know, the older he gets and everything. But, you know, then we ran him at Laurel once, and he had actually had got a conjugal fracture from that. Gave him a time off, and we started him back in training and didn't like the way the colt was going, really. I said, you know, so this colt's not moving the way he used to. So we took him home and turned him out for like 3 months, and just watching him in the field every day, you could see this colt was getting more confidence and he was using himself right. So anyway, took him back to the racetrack, and then the rest is history. I mean, he hasn't done anything wrong since.
Well, you know, they had me kind of scared talking about him upstairs in the press box, and how he was tough to handle, and how you took him to the post and all that. And having trained horses for 20 years, I know sometimes you get one of those that's just a little screwy. But he was a perfect gentleman. I mean, he couldn't have been any better. Correct me if I'm wrong. I didn't watch him the whole time, but you were with him. I mean, he handled everything perfectly.
Okay, you know, the last fall with the Breeders' Classics, the West Virginia Breeders' Classics, and the race after that, the Wavo, he started really coming around and getting better last fall. And so far this year, both races that he's run, he was actually a really, really good. So, you know, I think that the things are getting better for him, and he's starting to handle everything a lot better.
Tim, why does the pony make that much of a difference for running to love you in the pre-race?
Well, you know, when you, it's funny, you know, he goes everywhere in the morning with the pony, so he's really, you know, comfortable with the pony. But it seemed like when we was trying to saddle this horse without the pony, he would be watching. When he seen the valet come around the corner at the saddle and start walking to him, you could see his whole demeanor change. I mean, he would become aggressive and just really bully you around. And, I mean, it was a couple times when we got done saddling, I come out of there and I told my wife, I said, I'm going to have to start going to the gym. I said, he's got me wore out. But we would get the saddle on him, but it was ugly a couple times. But, you know, the pony, actually the steward, Danny Wright, really started working with me there at Charlestown. And he said, Tim, do you think the pony would help to get this horse packed up? I said, I think it would be a great idea to try it. So we started doing that, and then, you know, everything has just kind of fell in place since then.
Yeah, I read that you gave the stewards a lot of credit for helping you along with the saddling and all that. That was really great. You don't hear many trainers talking that way about the stewards, especially these days.
I swear. Well, you know, they witnessed Mr. Wright most of the time was in the paddock, and he witnessed these battles, and he knew how hard the valets and everybody was trying. He was just trying to come up with a easier way to get this done, and especially since the colt had so much talent, he didn't want to see him get hurt either, you know?
Yeah.
Tim, I loved your quote after the race where you said, I know this sounds corny, but this is the best thing that's ever happened to me besides me meeting my wife 18 years ago. And you talked earlier about your wife and how you now work together. Talk about that. How did you meet her? How did you celebrate afterwards?
Well, I tell you, let me just talk about our celebration, and then I'll tell you how we met. We got done, and we had work to do. I had to go to the farm and check on a couple things. My wife was raising an orphan lamb, so she had to get back to the house to feed this lamb that was waiting on her to come down the driveway. So we did a couple things like that, and then we had a mare foal 12:30 that night, a Saturday night. We had a mare foal, and then we didn't have a lot of celebrating or a lot of rest until actually Monday. I was going to take her out for dinner on Easter Sunday the next day, and my man from the farm said, you better get over here. You got a mare circle. And I said, well, we'll be there in a minute. So we stopped over here at the farm. I delivered a foal, and everything went real smooth with her, treated the mare. And it takes about an hour before the baby's up and really moving around and gets ready to start nursing. So we went out and grabbed a quick something to eat and then come back, and we got the baby nursing. And then everything just worked real good. But where was we? Oh, my wife and I meeting. I guess Judy and I met like 18 years ago at the racetrack, and you know, we dated for a while. I helped her with her horses. She helped me with mine. And then one day I went over. She said, come over and get on this colt. He's too tough for me. So I did. And I was going around there, and a horse got loose on the racetrack and come running straight at me. And anyway, my horse wheeled, and I come off, and he steps on my leg and broke my leg. So anyway, she said, well, I might as well just move my horses over across the road where you're at, and then I can take care of everything while you're hurt. So, you know, one thing led to another, and we've built our life. The last 18 years just been absolutely wonderful, and we've made a great partnership. She's just a really, really good horse person.
That's a very unusual story where your girlfriend breaks your leg, and then you have a great life together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it gives a whole new meaning to break a leg.
Yeah, hey, there you go.
Well, that is incredible, and I'm so glad that it's worked out the way that it has. And she was riding races for a while too, wasn't she, Tim?
Yeah, Judy, I watched her. Yes, Judy rode races, and Judy was when we was younger. Judy was really good on young horses and tough horses. So I was watching her get on these horses. I mean, that's back when people use a lot of equipoise and stuff, and these horses were rank, you know. So I told her, I said, why don't you come over and start getting on my horses? Why? I said, you don't need to get on them kind of horses anymore. So, you know, she started coming over, and the more she got on mine, I said, I think she thought, maybe I don't need to get on them orangutans anymore. So anyway, just kind of, but we was a good fit from the start. I mean, we both had a lot of horse knowledge. And then, you know, at supper table, we're eating supper. We're talking about our day's work. Hey, do you think something would work a little better with this one? So we put our notes together at the end of the day and try to come up with a plan for the next day.
That's fantastic. It's such an advantage when you're a trainer to have a wife that understands, or a husband for that matter, that understands the business, because it's such a unique business. It's more of a lifestyle than a job. So that really makes a huge difference, I think.
Oh, it does. And, you know, just like Judy gets to the track, I go to the farm in the morning, then I go to the track. But Judy gets to the track early in the morning. If we got to take temperatures or whatever, I make the training chart, but then she looks at the horses over or takes temperatures and everything. So a lot of times when I get there, she said, I took a couple of these horses off the training chart. She said, you need to look at them before they go to the track, because Judy is really good. She spots things. She's real meticulous in everything she does. So it's great for me because, you know, I can't look at everything all the time.
Visiting with trainer Tim Grams here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, fresh off his big win in the Grade 2 Charlestown Classic with West Virginia bred Running to Love Ya. Tim, since we're talking about riders, your wife Judy being a former rider, how about jockey Oscar Flores? I mentioned it's a first graded stakes victory for you as a trainer, but Oscar picked up his first graded stakes win in the Charlestown Classic when he crossed that finish line. He's won more than 1,300 races. This was a big one for him, too.
It was. I tell you, Oscar has worked for us, I'm going to say, probably between 8 and 10 years. He's been hurt some, but always comes back, and he's the same every time. Oscar is a very, very classy guy. You know, we talk, we put our notes together, we come up with a plan ahead of time, and just like with this big race coming up, I talked to Oscar about it. Even in the post parade, we was talking. And we kind of knew that inside horse would kind of take, Diamond King would take the lead, and we could drift right over and just right off his flank, and it's kind of what we thought. But Oscar's the type. I said, Oscar, I said, this is what we'd like to do. If things change, you know what to do. I got a lot of confidence in him because we've been very successful together, and he's got a good head on his shoulders.
Does he get a lot of your horses in the morning, too?
Yep, Oscar comes out every day. There's some days that he doesn't have to come out, but any day I need him out there, which is most of the time, he comes out and he gets on horses every day, yeah.
You know, I'll tell you a great story about Oscar, Tim. I don't even know if you've heard this story yet, but I know our listeners will enjoy this. Jude and I had the privilege afterwards of going to dinner at the sports bar at the casino with John Velasquez and with Javier Castellano, who were, of course, both there to ride the Charlestown Classic. And Javier was telling us the story about Oscar and how after they passed the finish line, Javier was genuinely happy for him, and he congratulated him on getting the victory. And Oscar was pumped up, and they came back to the jocks room. And after they had showered and were getting ready to leave, he went back to Oscar again just to say, hey, you know, before I leave, congratulations again. And Oscar said, you know, Javier, I know you. And it took Javier back. And he said, what do you mean you know me? How do you know me? And he said, well, when you first came to the United States in 1997, I've known you since then. And Javier had no idea what he was talking about. He said, when you rode at Calder in 97, when you first came here, he said, I would watch you. He said, I was working at Calder. I was the guy who was cleaning the tables and sweeping the floors. He said, but I would always watch Javier Castellano, and I followed your career all the way. And Javier turned to him and he says, yeah, and look at you now. He said, now you're kicking my butt in a million-dollar race.
Isn't that something?
Amazing.
It is. And like I say, two classy guys can talk to each other like that, and they're genuinely happy for one another, you know?
Yeah, they certainly are. Before we're coming up on a commercial break here, Tim, in just a couple of minutes, but before we get to that point, you mentioned your farm and you and your wife having that farm not far from Charlestown. Tell us a little bit about the farm and your operation.
Well, we've got a 30-acre farm here about 4 miles from town. We breed, this year we've gotten 10 foals. most of the time we breed between 10 and 15 mares a year. And then we break all of our babies and everything, fold all of our mares ourselves here at the farm. Actually, Sylvester Carmuch helps us break the babies out here. His brother's Kendrick. But Sylvester helps us at the racetrack and helps me break babies out here at the farm. So we've got a pretty good setup and a good place to get the babies all started. And then we just take them from here to the track when they're ready. But then we also got a place over in Carneysville where we live at. But our training operation is only like about four miles away from the race set.
That's great. So you can shuttle the horses in and out at will, pretty much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, it seems to be working right now. Whatever you're doing, Tim, don't change anything.
I'm telling you. Hate to change now, huh?
Well, Tim Grahams is indeed our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasit Tipton. Again, just a couple of minutes away from our bottom-of-the-hour commercial break. In the second half of the program, we're going to go back to the early days of Tim Grahams, and we'll ask him about how he got started, some of the people that helped him along the way, and all of the things that he went through to get to this point, because he is now at a different level, having trained a Grade 2 winner. And JT, you know as well as I do that after training horses for 20 years, that nothing in this sport comes without hard work.
Oh, no. Like I said earlier, it's a lifestyle, and it's one of those things where it's 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. So we'll ask him when the next vacation's coming.
It doesn't sound like he gets too many of those.
No, I doubt.
You know, real quick before we do get to this break, I'll tell you one quick story. Had a chance to catch up with Bill Mott at the Kentucky Derby this past week before the race. And he was telling us the story off air when we finished the interview. He was telling us the story about there was one point in his life where he was very young. He was just starting to get into training, and he didn't know if this was going to be the right choice for him because it was such a struggle, and there were so many things that weren't going right at that point. And he really questioned whether training horses was what he was going to do for a living. I'm glad he made the decision that he did and persevered.
And there's probably about 25, 30 trainers that wish he hadn't.
Probably at least. All right, we are going to get to that break. We'll come back second half of the program with trainer Tim Grahams. Stay with us. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Nominate now to the 2019 Fasic Tipton Selected Yearling Sales. The July sale, July 9th and 10th in Lexington, Kentucky. The Saratoga sale, August 5th and 6th in Saratoga Springs, New York. And the New York Bred Yearling Sale in Saratoga, August 11th and 12th. Recent Greatest Stakes graduates of the Fasic Tipton Selected Yearling Sales include Mind Your Biscuits, Dream Tree, Rushing Fall, Mopetism, Sipican Harbor, Stormy Liberal, and many more. Nominate now the Fasic Tipton Selected Yearling Sales. Stronger than ever.
Now standing at Buck Pond Farm, Bet on Red, Wildcat Red.
Wildcat Red runs away to an impressive score in the Hutchison.
After winning the Grade 3 Hutchison, Wildcat Red goes on to win the Grade 2 Fountain of Youth in near record time. Faster than Pulpit, faster than Thunder Gulch, and faster than 49er. Multiple graded stakes winner and Grade 1 performing millionaire, Wildcat Red. Also standing at Buck Pond, V.E. Day. After winning three in a row at Belmont and Saratoga, V.E. Day wins the Grade 1 Traverse in one of the most exciting finishes in history with a speed rating of 112.
But here comes V.E. Day with a final try. Who will win the Traverse? It will be too close to call!
Major League Belmont and Saratoga talent, V.E. Day. For more information, contact Buck Pond Farm at www.buckpond.com.
You know, it's never too late to start talking racing at Woodbine. Major race dates you can look forward to later this year include the Woodbine Oaks on June 8th, the Queen's Plate June 29th, the Woodbine Mile September 4th.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
For a commercial farm like us in Frankfurt Park, you have to get value for money. Uvetsi won a grade 3 in California.
Big performance by Uvetsi.
And then we bred Take Charge Paula.
Take Charge Paula with the win.
When we can get some of these Windsor dollars, as far as we're concerned, it's the same as real money because we're just putting it back in again there for the coming year. Over the next couple of years, I think it's going to become even more important.
I'm here with Dr. Jim Chiappetta of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, will the strips make my horse go faster?
The reality is, there's nothing out there that's going to turn a $10,000 claimer into a graded stakes winner. But what we should think about, NASCAR figured out long ago, incremental improvements collectively provide improved performance. That's one area where a Flair strip can help. They're part of the toolkit that many trainers use to make marginal gains for overall improvement in health and performance.
Learn more at flairstrips.com/learn.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The half in a bruising 45-3. Sister Aim is tackled by Moonlit Song. All Flatter watched it all unfold in front of her and comes after this West Virginia bred champion who's taken the lead. Moonlit Song will have to fend off All Flatter in the stretch. Moonlit Song with another gear and she struts her stuff in the stretch. Moonlit Song, a dominant performance. She wins it by just over 2 in the end over All Flatter, Spanish Moss, and Jackie's Notion. The final time, 118-2.
I got to tell you, Paul Espinoza is great radio. Outstanding.
Very dramatic.
Yeah, outstanding. Moonlit Song, trained by our special guest here tonight. That is Tim Grahams, who is joining us for the full hour on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, we are with you in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. Don't forget, if you miss any portion of this program or any of our talk shows, all you have to do is head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, and you can listen to all of our programs at your leisure. They're all there for you, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Well, that effort from Moonlit Song, you heard Paul reference in the call, West Virginia bred champion, trained by Tim, that was an allowance win 2 starts ago, February 22nd at Charlestown. She's a multiple stakes winner. She's won 14 of 26 lifetime starts and more than $400,000 in earnings to her credit. And Tim, she is another filly, another horse that has to be extremely special to you and to your wife, Judy.
She really is. She's been really a blessing to have, because was one of those fillies that every time you took her out there, you knew she was going to give you 100% every time. But she was a really a nice filly for a long time for us.
When did you know that she was going to be special?
Well, I tell you, you know, training her, we took her off the farm, started her in there, and she was always just a real good eater. So she carried a lot of weight all the time, you know what I mean? But it took we probably had worked her 5 or 6 times, because every time we worked her, she'd come back like I just worked her 2 miles with her tongue hanging out. Just real tired. And she just would get so fatigued quick. So, but after about the 6th work, you know, because she wasn't impressive for a long time. But after 6 or 7 works, I said, hey, I seen something here a little different today. And, you know, after that, she started moving forward, and then we knew. I said, hey, this filly looks like she's got talent, but it took a long time to get a bottom in it, you know, to where she started to perform well.
It's interesting how each horse is so different, and there's really no way around, you know, privatizing their development. I mean, you can't just cookie cutter them. You got to really pay attention, and I think that maybe one of your strengths as a trainer is that you really spend a lot of time with the animals, and you know the ins and outs of what they're going through, and adjust accordingly.
Yep. You know, just like a lot of horses, we try to match them up good when we gallop them together, because some horses do easy what others struggle to do, you know. So we try to, when we pair horses up, we try to pick horses that are comfortable with one another. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I found it interesting that both Moonlit Song and Running to Love Ya are by the same stallion, Fiber Sond, who stands in West Virginia. According to the Blood Horse Stallion Register, for $1,000 live full. That's the stud fee for Fiber Sond, who has now produced a grade 2 winner in Running to Love Ya. Tell us a little bit about the stallion, too, Tim.
Great horse. You know, at first, you know, when a new stallion comes to town, you know, I like the a lot of people jump on the bandwagon early. I don't really do that. But after I seen John McKee and get some of these colts running, I said, well, I can see I'm going to have me some of these. You know, seeing how fast, and they were all very attractive horses, but just so quick, and they got ready to run early. I said, we're going to have to try a couple of these. But thank God we did.
Yeah, so he obviously paired up nicely with some of your mares.
Yeah.
You keep about 10 mares around usually?
Yeah, we got probably 10 to 14 mostly, yeah.
How many horses do you have in training now, Tim?
We got 39 horses at the track and probably, I'd say, 40-some at the farm.
Wow, that's a lot of horses. Is that the number you want to be at, ideally?
I think so. That's a good number. I figure at the racetrack, with Judy and I, if we can own half or a little bit more at the racetrack, that's a good number for us. Unless they ain't running any good, then they're doing that.
Yeah.
But we try to keep half the stable for ourselves and then others for clients that we've trained for a long time. But it seems like a number that works out for us pretty good.
You know, as we were getting ready to go to that bottom of the hour commercial break, Jude had mentioned asking you about what your next vacation is going to be, if there's any vacation plans in the works. Do trainers get time to get away for vacations?
Well, you know, I don't think a lot, especially because Judy and I, we don't have any assistant trainers or anything at the track. We got a couple grooms that take over for us, and my sister comes over and helps some when Judy and I do take off. But we don't take a lot of vacations. We'll take a couple days here sometime in the summer. We may go to Kentucky to see Bo Lane, a real good friend of ours, and something like that. We usually do go to Texas in January for the Fort Worth Stock Show. They got a ranch horse sale out there. We go out there for 3 or 4 days, but we stay pretty close to what we do every day.
Yeah, it's important to get away once in a while, but it's so hard to do. I mean, in 20 years, I got away twice, so I know what that's like. But the nice thing about Charlestown too is they give you that forced week or 10 days or so after the Charlestown Classic, where at least you can relax a little bit and you don't have to work day and night.
That would have been good for us, but just so happened to be the same time where we had a bunch of mares foaling. But I said, it's a funny thing. I said, you know, it's a lot easier to stay up all night when you know that you just filled the bank up.
That's great line.
It makes it easier to go to work, but it's nice. I mean, like I say, with everybody, they work so hard. So when you do get a runner in your stable, our whole outfit, everybody that works for us and everything, you can see everybody just walks a little straighter, and just you can tell everybody is really proud of what happened there on the 20th.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, even Mike mentioned we went to dinner, but like everybody that had been to the races was so excited for you and for your horse and for West Virginia. You know, late night powwow. She was the only previous graded stakes winner. Now you've kind of beat her out with the grade two. And I mean, there was a whole different feeling. We've been to a lot of Charlestown Classics, but this one had a whole different feeling, and it was because, you know, everybody knows you and knows your horses and your operation, and everybody seems so proud of the whole thing. It was really great.
You know, I tell you, and my wife said she was standing in the grandstand. She said she never had seen the grandstand like that before, even on Breeders' Classics night. This night here topped it off. It just, you can tell, like you said, that just everybody was, you know, genuinely happy for what they just seen. They were very happy and supportive of what happened, you know.
Tim, is it different when you walk around Charlestown now? Do you get more people coming up and saying hello and congratulating you and wanting to shake your hand?
You know, we do. People still, you know, still really happy about that day. And there's still a couple people that I haven't seen, you know, still congratulate us. There was one of my friends, actually, that I went to school with. He was over with his daughter a couple days before the race, and I stood there at the winner's circle while I had some 2-year-olds training. And he said, Tim, there's a big race over here this weekend, isn't it? And I said, yeah, Dave, there is. He said, you going to have anything in it? I said, yeah, we're going to have one in it. I said, maybe we'll get a piece of it. He said, well, he said, good luck. You know, Dave's not really involved with horse racing a lot. He's an airplane pilot, actually. And he called us a couple days after the race. He said, Tim, I meant to get back with you. How'd you do in that race? I said, we won it. And he couldn't believe it. You know, he said, so anyway, I sent him some pictures and everything. And Dave was, you know, so we were school buddies. He was so happy for us and just, you know, and it is unbelievable, you know, for just regular guys to be able to have a day like that. That's really something special, because that's all we are, is regular people.
Well, I think that's one of the things that made it so special. And, you know, we go on a lot of trips. We cover, you know, a lot of the best races in the United States and some abroad too. And, you know, when I come home from a trip or whatever, my wife says, oh, how was it? You know, and usually it was good, you know, this or that. I go, it was fantastic. You can't even believe what happened. I was so excited. And I was like that for like 3 days after. Anybody that would bring up the race or my trip or whatever. And I was just over the moon. I mean, I just thought it was so great, especially knowing your story. I don't even know you personally, but I learned a little bit about your story from Mike and the interview that you did, and I just thought that was so cool that, you know, somebody that's local that works so hard would win that race.
I tell you, it was a special day for a lot of people. Charlestown, and I think, like we talked earlier, I think Charlestown was actually very proud of us as we are of them. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's for sure.
Yeah, that goes without saying. Absolutely. 110%. It was a special day, and not just for you, but for the entire racing industry in the state of West Virginia. It truly put the state program on the map, and that's all thanks to you and to your wife, Judy, and the great training job that you did. We run into love you. Let's go back even further, Tim. I said we were going to go back to the early days of Tim Graham. So take us back to the beginning. Where did the love of horses and racing begin for you?
Well, you know, growing up, my family always had riding horses. We didn't do a lot, but we rode and did just trail rides and stuff like that. But probably when I got involved with the racehorses is when I took a job for Bill Downing, who trained some horses there right in Keedysville, Maryland. And I started going over there, and Bill knew a lot about horses, and he taught me a lot. And did that for 3 or 4 years and really liked it. And then while I was working there, Bill took me to the starting gate, which he worked at, and he got me a job working on the starting gate. So went from the starting gate to being an outrider, and from an outrider to getting my trainer's license. You know, I think we said earlier in an interview, it was funny that once I stopped out riding, I had an appointment with Joe Service, John's dad. He was a steward here at Charlestown at the time. I said, Joe, I'd like to get my blacksmith license, because I was shoeing some horses then. He said, no problem, Tim. When you want to take a test? So we set up a day. Anyway, I had 2 or 3 horses, then I was racing with somebody else's down as a trainer. The day that I was supposed to take the blacksmith test, I said, you know, I think I want to get my trainer's license. So anyway, I went up there, and Joe changed the appointment from him to Frank Utterback, and Frank gave me my test for a trainer, and you know, and then the rest is history. Started training and, you know, and went on. But ironically, after the Classic, it was a couple of days after the Classic, Frank Utterback, who's retired now, he called me. I was on the way to the farm or something. He called me and congratulated me. I told him, I said, well, Frank, I said, you're the one that started all this. I said, you give me that trainer's test that day. So just a great guy, great bunch of guys here at Charlestown.
Do you shoe your own horses too?
I was an outrider. I mean, I would gallop my own horses back when I was lighter. I've grown into the pony size now, so I don't gallop anymore. But I used to gallop some, you know, back when I first got started.
How about, do you shoe your own horses, Tim?
I don't now. I used to when I only had 4 or 5 horses, I would do them. But, you know, our outfit's gotten so big, and I just had to you know, put some duties off on other people. But we got some real good blacksmiths that work with us now and do a great job. But and my back's not really good. I do some. Dude, I still trim all my yearlings and stuff like that, but my back's not quite the way it used to be, so I let other people do some of that work.
Well, we can let that slide for your back, but I know you got plenty of time, so I don't understand why.
He had a hard time finding time to celebrate with his wife after they won this grade two.
That's unbelievable. How's that lamb doing?
The lamb's good. We've integrated it back in with the flock, and everything's really good. That actually, the lamb's mother had four of them. That's the first time. My wife raises some sheep. That's the first time we had any of them that had four. So it was too many for the mama, and she just kind of pushed this one off to the side. And my wife noticed it right away. I said, well, looks like you're going to have to be mama here for a while.
Wow.
But it worked out really good. As soon as she broke it to the bottle, it would be out in the field. When it'd see her outside, it would run to the fence, and she'd feed it. So it worked out good, thank God.
What other animals do you have on the farm?
Well, mostly we got the horses. My wife's got four or five border collies and an Australian shepherd, and we got probably 10 head of cattle that we keep over where we live at. My wife raises some calves every year, and then, you know, we wean the calves off and sell them then. But we just got about 10 head. And I usually got some roping cattle, but we're so busy at the farm right now. I haven't been roping any. We've been into the foaling business, so I haven't needed any roping cattle. I haven't had time to do anything. So hopefully here early this summer we can get back to it a little bit.
Do you rope?
Yeah, I rope. You know, competitive, you know, but I'm not real good at it, but I have a lot of fun doing it. But, you know, I got some friends that's really good, but rope good enough to where you can go and hopefully get your entry fees back at the end of the day if you have a good day. You know, but it's a lot of fun. It's something to, you know, for you to do just to get away from the racetrack for a little bit for 2 or 3 hours in the afternoon now and then. I got some friends, we rope together. It's fun.
Now I know why he can't get away on a vacation. It's not like you can call somebody and say, hey, can you come over and let our border collies out and our sheep out and our cattle out and take care of our horses. It's not that simple.
It makes it a little tougher, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Tim, do you guys have any children?
We don't have any children. We sure don't. But we've got a lot of them that we got to take care of, but we don't have any kids, no.
Yeah. You know, we've been doing this program for, oh, gosh, I don't know, what, 6, 7, 8 years now, Jude?
Yeah,
I guess it's been a long run here with Trainer Talk, and we visited with so many trainers over the years. Very, very few, if any, that I can remember have said that they spent time working on the starting gate as a member of the starting gate crew. So, Tim, there's a lot of people listening out there that don't understand how important that job is in horse racing. So tell us a little bit about what goes into working on the starting gate.
Well, you know, with the young horses coming over there and getting them acclimated to the gate where they're not afraid of it and, you know, trying to make everything a smooth process at the gate to where they don't, you know, a lot of people say the big iron monster, right? Well, it is monster to a lot of young horses until they get acclimated. And some horses, it takes a long time, and other horses, they never get really good there. They tolerate it, but they're not really good there. But, you know, but it was fun working with all the gate guys and schooling the young horses. It helped you realize a little bit of just how the horses think. I tell you, a lot of people would benefit a lot from the starting gate because the mechanics of it and how, you know, to get the horses acclimated to a gate. I learned a lot over there. I learned a lot at the starting gate. Just a little bit more of how horses their thinking process about it.
Yeah, it's really the one of the most dangerous things in thoroughbred racing is the starting gate, getting the horses used to that and having them accept it and then just the actual breaking out of the gate can be a little wild sometimes. We saw what happened with War of Will in the Louisiana Derby and things like that happen, you know, on a daily basis around the country. But thankfully, the guys that work on the gate are amongst the best horsemen that we have for the most part.
Absolutely. And, you know, with the gate, you know, you win and lose races at the starting gate.
Absolutely.
You know, if something, if, you know, if I'm not in there and they're not relaxed, they can't brake nice and smooth. But, you know, just like Running to Love You, for an example, he was never a bad gate horse, but, you know, when he would get close to the break, he would get a little antsy and stuff like that. So we worked with him a lot at the gate, and every time that I enter him, once he hits the overnight, I'll take him to the gate either once or twice, and we'll stand him. So he stands at the gate a lot. I want it to be, you know, second nature for him. Just, you know, from the years of being there, the better they are, the better your chances are.
Tim, do you remember a horse that you had that was maybe the most challenging to get used to the starting gate?
Well, Running to Love You was a little bit tough for a while, but probably I had a horse a long time ago. His name was A Few More Dollars. You know, the first time he run, he got pretty negative back behind the gate, and I think he got the bridle pulled off of him. And everything, but anyway, when they finally got him in there, he went in and he run good, but you know, but that there was a good homework for us. You know, I said, look, I've got to get this straightened out. So you know, the more we work with him, some horses they get better, but some horses they get up to a certain point. Say, well, if I can keep them here, I'll be okay. But some horses just never really like the gate. It's some they have a hard time with it. Some horses do, but I think with the horsemanship and stuff at the gate, you know, you got a lot of good guys there. So, you know, if you can keep bad things from happening, that's always a positive.
You know, Jude asked earlier about the mares that you have. What's the story behind Running to Love You's Dam, Love 'Em Run?
Well, you know, I don't know a lot about that mare. We don't have his mother. We bought Running to Love You as a late weanling off a friend of my wife's, Leslie Cromer. So we bought him. We didn't raise him. Well, we bought him as a weanling, but, you know, I don't know a lot. I think that mare had made a little bit of money. We bought the horse a year or two before that was by Peak Dancer. I think he made like 30-some thousand. Nice, big, good-looking horse. But just, you know, we only got so far with him, but I think Running to Love You, he's been her big horse.
Yeah, and by the way, Love 'Em and Run is the name of that dam. There is an N in the middle there. So Love 'Em and Run, the name. So it's pretty clever the way the whole thing came about with the naming and everything, too.
Yeah, it was. But, you know, we got a three-year-old that we haven't started yet out of that same mare. I guess it was a two-year-old when we bought the other one, or three, I can't remember. But we got a three-year-old that we're getting ready to run pretty soon out of that same mare that Leslie has.
What'd you name that one?
His name's Love and Touch.
Love and Touch. Sounds good.
That sounds like a future Charlestown Classic winner to me.
I hope it is.
So, yeah, all right, let's go that direction then, Tim. What do you do for an encore now? What's next?
I tell you, you know, I really don't know, Mike, really. You know, I'm not sure. We got a couple three-year-olds that we're looking forward to running. We got one in tomorrow night that we really like. But, you know, I don't know what we do with Running to Love You. Do we just keep him here or maybe find some kind of stake here close by at Laurel or Delaware or something? Or just stay here for the Classic in the fall, you know, in October. You know, he's an easy horse to train up to a race. So, you know, we was off 5 months the last time before I run him the first time. So, you know, he's easy to train. But still, you know, when you get a horse on top of their game, it's hard to just settle him and not run him because he likes to run.
What do you do with your two-year-olds? Are you a two-year-old kind of trainer? Do you like running the two-year-olds or do you give them a lot of time? Or what's your philosophy with the babies?
Well, we give them a lot of time. We'll take them in. We've got probably, I guess, 6 2-year-olds there now. What we do before we start putting a lot of stress on them, we'll x-ray them and check for knee closures just to see how mature they are. And if their knees are still pretty open and everything, we'll just kind of gallop them and train them light. Or if it's going to be too long, we'll take some of them back home to the farm and turn them out and bring some others in and start schooling them. But we try to take our time. Actually, most of our horses don't run really until now. You know, Running to Love You, he was an exception. He ran as a 2-year-old and won that 2-year-old classic race. But most of our horses, I may get a start in them in November or December, but a lot of times it's January and February till we get one of our babies ready to run.
Well, he's patient, and he always puts the interests of the horses first. That's why he's waiting to determine where Running to Love You will run next. He is trainer Tim Grahams, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Tim, we are inside of 4 minutes left. This has been a very fast-moving hour, and it's been great to have you on the program. Really enjoyed the visit. Outside of Running to Love You and Moonlit Song, who we've talked about here on the show, who are some of the other horses that when you look back, you say, okay, these are horses I'm always going to remember for whatever reason?
Well, probably besides those horses, the top horse on the list would have to be It's Only Money, a horse I bought from a real good friend of mine in Kentucky, Bo Lane. She's a Caper too, was a real nice mare, made 300 and some thousand. Beware the Bop was a mare that made like 400,000. But Blushing BJ was my wife's mare. I better not leave that one out. she was a real nice mare for us and had a couple nice babies also. But I'd say they'd have to be pretty close to the top. Kate Power was another good horse. So we've been fortunate enough to have some of the, maybe not the best horses, but just them hard knockers, them ones that went out there and bring a check home for you.
Yeah, that's great when they all earn $300,000-$400,000. That's really good. That'll keep the ship afloat.
Absolutely.
Tim, before we let you go, take me inside your house for a minute. How much Running to Love You memorabilia and pictures are around your house right now?
Well, there's quite a few Running to Love You and Moonlit Song. Got one wall dedicated to Moonlit Song, and Judy's working on the Running to Love You side of it now. But that's we've got a couple things of Blushing BJ, but mostly right now it's Moonlit Song and Running to Love You is catching up quick.
What's the prize for the Charlestown Classic? Is it a nice trophy?
It was a nice trophy. I'm not exactly sure. They're not candle holders, but they're like a glass crystal, two things that stand up. Not exactly sure what it is, actually. But they are very beautiful, whatever they are. my wife got them sitting there on the fireplace, and the racetrack had that beautiful arrangement of flowers, which, hey, that's one good thing to say. They said, well, how about these flyers, Tim? I thought, oh, man, I don't know about this. So I said, if you can try it, if you just go try to put them on him nice and easy. And I could see Oscar's eyes. He was thinking, oh, boy. But anyway, he did handle it real good, and I was really pleased because it was a beautiful arrangement the racetrack had made for that race. But that's about it, I guess, you know. And then his saddle blanket from that day.
Yeah, yeah. Special day and so many memories and so many more good times ahead for trainer Tim Grahams and his wife Judy. They make a dynamic team, and they are the winners of the Grade 2 $1.2 million Charlestown Classic here in 2019. Tim, really do appreciate the visit, my friend. Continued success, and we'll look forward to seeing you when we get back up there next year, if not before.
Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, Tim Grahams here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Love that guy.
Oh, yeah, he's terrific.
Yeah, so genuine and hardworking.
Yeah, I love just everything he said. He just does all the right things. It's really cool.
Yeah, win for the good guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, and our special guest, Tim Grahams, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.